Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Our lesson comes from the Old Testament in Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 through 9. As Paul wrote in Romans 15 and verse 4, these things were written for our learning. So let us learn from this historical record from the ancient past. There is demonstrated to us a characteristic of mankind that has unfortunately plagued him down through the ages, namely, man does not remain long in faithfulness to God. Just why mankind will not learn the lessons from the past is bewildering, but the fact remains that men repeat the same errors generation after generation. Now, just exactly how long from the time of creation this event took place, we cannot determine. It comes about a century after the flood at the time of Noah. Noah and his descendants were saved from the destruction of the flood because Noah, a righteous man and a preacher of righteousness, obeyed God's instructions, built an ark, and 8 souls were spared. Now they were out of the ark, and they were instructed to go forth and multiply and replenish the earth, and this they had done to some extent. Verse 1 says, "And the whole earth was of one language and one speech." Now just how many souls were living on the earth, we cannot know. But there was a unity among the people. There was the single language that they all spoke. The language barrier that is such a barrier for people today was non-existent. And this certainly facilitated their relationships with each other and made mankind a powerful and unified force with which to deal. Verse 2 tells us, "It came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar and dwelt there." Now it seems that the people were scattering, and this enabled them to replenish the earth. There was movement among them as they sought for places to live. And one such location was the plain called the Shinar. Just precisely where this locality is, we cannot be sure. Even the meaning of Shinar is unknown, although many have speculated that it probably meant the land of two rivers. And if that be true, it could mean the geography in and around the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. This would be in the general area that is later known as Assyria, and then Babylon. But all this is uncertain and insignificant. We can be relatively sure that it was in that general vicinity since the ark had landed on Ararat. Verse 3 reads, "And they said one to another, Go to, let us make brick, and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime they had for mortar." Now this is a very interesting statement because it indicates the skills of the people. Friend, they were not subhumans, nor what evolutionists would like to present as some kind of half-man and half-beast. The primitive man was man, not something in between. He had skills and tools and abilities to provide, and also with which to build. Man was an industrious creature. He had knowledge. He knew the art of brickmaking and how to put it to use. And in verse 4, "And they said, Go to, let us build a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the earth." Now we're beginning to see something of the character of these people. They were going to put their talents to work, but it was for evil purposes. Talents that a person may have does not mean that they shall be used to produce good necessarily. They can also be used to produce evil. It depends upon how they are used and the motives behind their use. Now, there were two motives stated for building the city and the tower. One was that they might not scatter over the face of the earth. There was the desire and the intent to keep a centralized place in which mankind would live. They would not replenish the earth in this way, but would rather remain restricted.
Another motive was that they would make a name for themselves. There is a reputation. Establish themselves as a power, something for which they could take pride in themselves and gloat in their power and their abilities. The flood had destroyed the civilization that had existed, and for good reason, the people had become terribly wicked. But now that the human family was expanding again, they had no indication or intention of allowing their wisdom and accomplishments to be destroyed another time, they thought. How foolish they were to think that men can build anything here upon this earth that will last forever. Look at the many peoples, the nations, the civilizations, the worldly powers that have risen, made a splash on the pages of history, only to be wiped away and for all practical purposes forgotten. Friend, only that which is spiritual will last. Only that which is of heaven will continue. Things of this earth cannot and will not be eternal. Actually, this whole scheme amounted to another rebellion against God. We see in their conduct that oft-repeated practice of mankind of not remaining faithful to God for very long, regardless of how many fresh starts he may be granted. This has been seen in the history of Israel, in the history of the Lord's church. Apostasy, digression, departure from God, that's been a part of man's sorry past down through the ages. And these two motives for building the city and the tower reflect not only a rebellious attitude toward God, an ignorance in thinking anything of this earth can last, but the foolishness of man to think that he can successfully direct his own steps and somehow get around what God expects and intends. Verse 5, the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. Now, we're not to think that God was unaware of what the people intended and what they were doing. This verse simply notes how God took attention to it and would deal with it. God gave recognition of the plans of men and how they were inconsistent with God's plan for man. In verse 6, the Lord said, "Behold, the people is one, and they all have one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing shall be restrained from them which they have imagined to do." Here we see the results of their misspent talents, their misspent unity. Their unity was and could have continued to be a blessing unto them. It granted them power and ability, but they abused what they had, and they set out on the evil and rebellious course. Left in this unified condition, there would be no limit to their rebellion. Obviously, God was disappointed that man would misuse what could have been to man's benefit. But as we see what those people did then, let us also realize how we can abuse and misuse the blessings now and bring ourselves God's displeasure. We may be granted material wealth, and it may be our downfall. We may have health, and we spend our lives in wickedness. We may have various talents, but use them for evil rather than for good. We can speak one with the other, and the ability to communicate is a great privilege, but James teaches how we often send forth from the same mouth blessing and cursing. Friend, people can be united in doing wrong, just as they can be united in doing right. So in verse 7, "Go to, let us go down and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech." Now God acts to disrupt their unity, to disrupt their evil. He would remove the blessing that they were abusing, the strength, the power, the success that they had enjoyed because of oneness among them and the oneness of language, that would be done away by the confusion of their language. And what powerful lessons we learn here. Why do you suppose the Apostle Paul urged brethren to speak the same things? Why would he urge them to be of the same mind and the same judgment? 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 10. Why would the Apostle Peter exhort brethren to speak as the oracles of God? 1 Peter 4 and verse 11. For in the power of being united, the strength in saying the same things, the abilities that abound in standing together with understanding are tremendous. Division is a drain on the energies of the church. When brethren are separated by talking differently, the forces of good are weakened. We all suffer from the sin of division. And as for these people, God knew that division would curtail their power for evil. And God knows that evil can curtail our power for doing good. In verse 8 and 9, we see the result of God's intervention. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. Now this place is sometimes called Babel, sometimes it is called Babel. Whatever pronunciation you make of it, in their state of confusion and division, they were not able to continue with their plans to build. Their rebellious intents were cut short. The original plans for them to scatter were once again expedited. The very name Babel means confusion. Their tongue, their language, was confused to the extent that they could no more dwell together, but they scattered abroad over the earth. So the wickedness of man to thwart the plans of God were uprooted. Friend, we see in this episode the overruling power of God. While we are not always sure how God does His will, we can be sure that the will of God shall ultimately prevail. How wise we are to submit to His will. And do we not see in this episode the power and the strength of unity and speaking alike? Giving forth with the same message is a great source of strength. Unity can work for good as well as for evil. God wants His people to be united. We can admire the industriousness and the ambition of people if it is rightly directed. But what evil can abound when men become vain and proud and seek their own glory rather than the glory of God? The story of Babel contains many principles we need to learn and practice in our own day. May we learn them, and may we rightly use them. This has been A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.